Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
My oldest daughter is at that stage in her life journey where she's looking at schools. And as you might expect, there's a lot of colleges out there that I just secretly hope she's not going to consider. And I don't mean to slam any of these schools, but after reading a couple articles this week, I'm thinking the University of Northern Iowa may be one that I hope she doesn't go to. Now, I'm not slamming any of you in Iowa at all.
And isn't it supposed to be beautiful there?
I'm sure there's some great aspects to the school. However, there's a couple of professors there that recently published an article that I do have to take a few exceptions with. Here's what they said, and I'll put it in a nutshell. Civility, that is, you know, being polite, speaking properly and kindly, civility, that is not a universal norm. That's not something we all need to do. Indeed, civility actually represents a form of white privilege, and it functions to erase racial identity. Now, hopefully, many of you are out there saying, what did Dawn just say? Because what? I hope that's the case, because I didn't really make any sense. So you may be familiar with white privilege. It's what you get given to you by walking around being white. And I actually accept part of the premise on this, okay? I have spent a lot of time in communities that are not predominantly white. And I understand that I do get special privileges. I don't get stopped by the cops as much as many of my non-white brothers and sisters. It's just a fact, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't believe that, go live as a non-white person for a while. That's simply a fact. However, the idea they're getting at here is that you expecting me to be civil is a form of white privilege. And what you're doing is you're keeping my ideas down by asking me to be civil. So I'm trying to think of an example of this. So
at what point do we stop over-complicating this whole conversation? Like, Don, really, you know, I think that in many ways we've moved past this, and those who haven't moved past it, that's because they're obsessing over it. Like, when these topics come up, it's frustrating because I know it is an issue, but it's an issue when we focus on it so much sometimes.
Well, I think the context for this, here's the context for why you would even come out with some crazy academic jargon like this. You get a speaker at a university that has a speech that presents some ideas that you don't like. What are you going to do in response? Are you going to present some arguments? Are you going to perhaps write your own paper and present it to them, or have a competing event, or maybe a debate, actually? What you're going to do on campus today is you're going to yell, scream, shout, throw stuff, try to shut that guy down.
It's a shouting match.
Yes.
But that's not just on campus. That is in the home.
Agreed.
That's among friendships. That is on Twitter. That is on Facebook. Like, you name it. Unless I perceive that you have value and agree with me, I'm going to shut you down.
So what these professors are doing is actually trying to provide some academic justification for that behavior. That's what they're getting at, okay? Just to, like, what are you talking about? That's what they want. They're like, no. Don't tell me to be civil. Don't tell me to be quiet. Don't tell me to stop throwing stuff or trying to shut you down. Because when you do that, you're just enforcing your white norms on me. And of course, that's a ridiculous notion. But how did we get here? This is what's intriguing to me. How did we get to the point in our society where civility is attacked because it's what he calls a racialized thing? It's a racialized norm. It's not a universal norm. That's actually what he wrote in his paper. It's not a universal norm. Nobody's out there telling us that everybody should be civil. That's just a white idea, okay? And here's the thing. Within a culture where there is no God, where there are no universal norms, he's not right about the racial thing, but he's actually right that who are you to tell me to be civil?
Right.
I actually get that.
You trigger people just by saying that sometimes, I think. And I think that's the issue, Don, is, you know, if you have not been raised, should I say, in an environment to practice being virtuous, to practice being thoughtful, to practice allowing others to have what they have to say, you're not necessarily going to today. So now all of a sudden people coming in and saying you need to be civil as part of this argument, no matter what side or viewpoint they're coming from, it almost is more triggering, right?
Well, yeah, you say who says who. Like, you're right. If you haven't, maybe you haven't been raised in that culture. I guess he could be right about that. I don't know about the race thing. I know a lot of virtuous non-white people, so I don't get the whole race thing. But maybe you haven't been raised in a culture that values civility. Okay. And somebody comes along and says, hey, you know what? We need to be civil. Well, if there are no universal norms, I guess that's what I'm getting at. If there are no absolutes above us, you are sort of in your rights to say, forget you.
Right.
I don't need to be civil. And that's, I think, the underlying justification here for these professors. They're like, you know what? There are no universal norms. So don't tell me to be civil. That's just a race thing. Here's what I'm getting at. All of this whole thing to say that in a culture without God, everything gets boiled down to who are you to tell me to do anything, right? And so the chaos that we have in our culture, whether it's sexual morality or campus culture where we just can't even have a debate anymore, and people are saying, oh, but we need to be civil, or oh, but we need consent, or oh, but we need this, or oh, but we need that. All of those things actually don't make any sense. There's actually no justification for those things unless you have an absolute moral standard behind you. And guess what? If there is no God, there is no absolute moral standard behind all of that. And until you're willing to say, we need to talk about the God stuff, we need to talk about worldviews here. Like, what kind of world do we live in? You're not going to win any of these moral debates. This is all just a little bit of a sideshow.
Where's your foundation?
Where's your foundation?
I think that that's what it comes down to. When you do not have God, you have no foundation for any of your ideologies or any of your behaviors. Anything goes, right? Everything is relative to what I believe is right or wrong. And the only basis for whether it's right or wrong is what I believe at the moment. Because everyone has conversions. Everyone grows to have different attitudes about different things. Think of yourself today versus 5 years ago. Maybe pick any number of topics. And I mean, you might have had a hugely different view than you do today. And an excellent example of this is the issue of marriage today. You know, almost every single state in the United States made some form of an amendment to their constitution to make marriage between one man and one woman over the last 15 years.
Yeah, just recently.
In the last 15 years, some states even sooner than that. And all of a sudden, the courts redefine marriage as being able to be between whoever wants to be together as marriage. This is the thing, is all of a sudden people are saying public opinion has changed. And I think that people are allowing media and they're allowing what is law. They think that what is law is what is moral, and what is law is right, and it's not right. And that, you know, that's just an example of you yourself have changed an attitude that used to be a cultural, moral, religious attitude that was a part of the foundation of society.
Well, you think, well, that's the question, isn't it? I mean, you talked about laws and how laws change, and people think, oh, well, I mean, the law changed, that means morality changed. Ultimately, in our society, what are the basis for morals? I think that's the question we need to start asking. Well, we're trying to answer that. And we're finding that we're basically built on sand in this culture. That because we are unwilling to say there is a God who has revealed certain things to us, and those things are absolutely true, and therefore we build our laws based on those things, we've tried to build it on all sorts of other things. Public opinion or whatever. And none of those things are stable enough. None of those things are universal, frankly. And so now we basically have a power play between a bunch of groups just yelling at each other. I'm right. No, I'm right. Well, says who? Says me. There's nothing above. All of the overtly racial stuff that I know people get frustrated with, like, how come you make everything racial? They're just trying to find some sort of absolute on which we can base everything. Some people look at economic disparity as the absolute. That's sort of the communist idea, right? Some people look at race as the absolute, for better or for, you know, like, okay, everything boils down to race. Everything boils down. They're looking for something to build the rest of their lives on. They're looking for a foundation. None of those things are the foundation. And they're all, you know, going to wash away like all the rest of our thing. Ultimately, it's about God. Now, I'm going to throw out something that I might be disputable for some people. Because there's this idea out there that, well, America was built on God. and on Christian morals. I actually don't think primarily that's the case. People had Christian morals, but they didn't build the country based on those. We didn't have a theocracy, and I'm not calling for a theocracy. I'm just saying that culture, if you're going to have a even such a thing as a university, what's the idea of a university? The unity of knowledge among all of these different disciplines. That's only possible if there is a unity. And that's why all of the original universities were built by the Catholic Church, because you had a unity of knowledge.
Boom.
All of that has failed now. We have no unity of knowledge. And so in a university, you don't have any sort of unity of thought. And that's why there are just a craziness happening. There's chaos on university campuses now. And I think in our culture, in American culture, we get a little bit of that. And I know people are like, what do you mean it wasn't built on God? Well, it was built on a mix of Enlightenment, rationalism, and Protestantism, actually.
And deism, Protestantism.
The Protestant notion was never that we could actually have, except for those states coming out of the Reformation that had political clout, and you said, all right, whatever the leader is, that's what this particular city or country is. So if the leader is a Calvinist, that country's a Calvinist. Except for that, Protestantism never had sort of this unity.
Well, and also the Founding Fathers were very much so oriented toward the virtuous man, the Greco-Roman type of education. They really stood on those principles, and that's where you saw many elements, the deism that took place within Protestantism as well. You know, that's where you see the challenges of what the culture was founded on in some ways, but also the beauty of that freedom that they implemented at the same time.
Oh, there was a lot of beauty, but there's a distinctive. I just want to make, there's a distinctive between that and, for instance, a medieval society that was more Catholic. That there was a different kind of unity that happened in those cultures than has happened in America. And that's something to think about as you're having these public debates.
This is Trending with Don and Timory on Relevant Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DonJohnsonMinistries.org or Timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
Even if you are not a football fan, you probably are aware that the last couple of weeks have seen two of the most dramatic finishes in football history, both NFL and college. Now, I'm what I would call a medium football fan. I like college football, but honestly, I hardly watched any games this year. I don't ever really watch the NFL, a little bit of Rams. However, I did catch the national championship game in college football. I missed this one that just happened. The Minnesota Vikings defeated the New Orleans Saints last week, 29-24, on a last-second 61-yard touchdown strike from Vikings quarterback Case Keenum, who I used to watch at Houston and when he was in college. Stephon Diggs caught this thing with 10 seconds to play. For some reason, it was like he was guarded by an angel or something. The defensive guy just completely whiffed on him, just missed him, and he looked around. It was like Diggs looked around like, what is going on? Here I have it. There's nothing but open spaces between me and the touchdown. He couldn't believe it. He got a touchdown. The Vikings win. Miracle finish for the Vikings. The week before, this I did watch, Alabama, who previously, frankly, I wasn't a big fan of, I'll be honest. Alabama's in the national championship game because they always are. They're just the best program in college football. And they were getting beat, though, by Georgia at the half. Okay, but what happened was the coach of Alabama put in a freshman from Hawaii. Tua Tagovailoa? Is that how you would say that, Timmy?
He's Samoan, right?
Samoan.
Yep.
Samoan kid.
Man. Don't have to pronounce it correctly. I tried.
Here he is, freshman. Put in, he hasn't played really all year except for a few snaps, and he does this amazing comeback, ties up the game with just a few seconds to go, and then in overtime throws this amazing pass to win the national championship for Alabama. Okay.
Two major plays last couple weeks, and there's something that I think is the straw that really draws the two of them together, which is something that I think you see often in sports, but it's not often covered.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because both guys, everybody's mobbing them. You know, they're in the huddle. The media is surrounding them. Both guys come across with almost the same words. They're like, you know what? Before I say anything about this win, I just want to thank God and my Savior, Jesus Christ. Keenum said something to the effect of, I don't have the quote in front of me, but he said something to the effect of, like, this is like the third best day in my life. And we're like, third best day.
This what he says. He talks, number one, I gave my life to Jesus Christ. Number two, the day I married my wife. And three, probably this one.
Yeah.
But
how
even
cool
just
is that?
The order that he had, God first, marriage is my vocation, and here's my career. It is wonderful, but it comes after all of that.
Absolutely. And then Tua, for his part, he said, before anything else, I would like to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. With him, all things were possible. He was just the most humble kid. I started reading a little bit about Tua after. And Nick Saban is his coach. And I didn't know this about Nick. I'll be honest. I wasn't, you know, because these coaches that win all the time. Nick is a pretty strong Catholic. Tua's not a Catholic, but he did go to Mass with Nick Saban every time he was out there being recruited. And they said, the reason I ultimately chose Alabama is because of my faith and how what a strong faith community it was.
Wow.
Nick Saban has given millions of dollars to build what I believe is a Catholic center on campus, actually, at Alabama. And so behind the scenes here are all these amazing stories of these mature young men who have their priorities straight and are winning the big games on top of that. And I get the sense that, you know what, even if they had lost, they still would have been okay, right?
Right.
It's not going to destroy them. They won, but they still had their priorities straight. And I thought, man, what a great example for my son or for, you know, young people out there everywhere to see these two stars have their priorities in perfect order.
Well, look at the element. Here are men who are incredible athletes, who have made great achievements, have fantastic discipline in order to have made it to this point. And what is the root of that discipline? The desire to be a better man before our God. Like, that is, if you are seeking discipline for any other self-seeking reason, there's a problem. And where you find yourself years later, you might have great discipline, but you might have no worth. And here are men that have worth and would continue to have worth whether or not they made these huge accomplishments these last couple of weeks.
So Tua, his, I was going to say idol. I don't think he would use the term idol. But the guy he looks up to the most in football is a man named Marcus Mariota. He used to be the quarterback for my team, the University of Oregon, the Ducks. He's now the quarterback for Tennessee and the Titans. Well, Mariota made news a couple of weeks ago because Mariota, in a scrum after with the media, he said some things that nobody noticed at the time. You know, he's a little bit like, yeah, we lost or whatever, and he was a little bit sharp with them. Nobody thought about it at all. What happened was, though, the next week he came back, and before he answered any questions, he said, guys, I just want to apologize. I just want to say I'm sorry. I talked to my mom, and she couldn't believe how I was on TV. And they all looked at him. They're like, Marcus, what are you talking about? Well, I was a little bit abrupt with you guys, and I just want to say I'm sorry and I apologize, and I shouldn't be that way. And my mom raised me better than that, you know, this sort of thing. And they're all looking at him like, are you kidding me? Who is this guy? Right? Nobody had noticed it. You know, it wasn't a thing. They're all like, you don't need to apologize. Yes, I do. And for Mariota, I just love that because here's a guy, and his mom's right there, obviously providing a lot of input here. Virtue is what I'm after. And it's more important for me to make sure that I'm virtuous and I'm right with you guys than winning these football games. And ladies and gentlemen, that's, if we could get that message across to our kids, how much better witness. I just think, you know, there's a lot of pressure put on kids these days to perform sporting. We've talked about sports a lot on the show and what a religion it is and how much pressure's on kids. And how about the pressure to just become good people? And here's the thing of it. You think that you're going to go out and change the world by being a great quarterback? I don't know. Maybe you will. Not likely. But you know how you will change the world? Be the kind of guy that Mariota was. I mean, you think those reporters weren't like, what's up with this guy? I mean, you could just tell they were amazed that there is anybody who's even like this anymore. That's the kind of person who actually changes lives. You know, that's the kind of person that makes you question, huh, do I have my priorities straight? And so on top of doing things like thanking God after, I mean, I appreciate that. I think that was awesome. But even more, I almost appreciate Mariota's thing more, where he actually showed some humility and real virtue by going and apologizing for something nobody was even offended by. Yeah, and so I thought that was pretty cool.
And that shows the importance of accountability to yourself, the importance of having standards for yourself. Other people might have good standards or maybe not good enough standards. And I think this is a good point too, maybe. Maybe you're in an environment where there are great standards, but you know that you can do more, that you should be better. And you rise above, even though everyone else in this case didn't recognize that maybe, you know, the way you were interacting wasn't that great, you still expected more of yourself. I think that we so easily allow ourselves to live and behave at the level of the people we're surrounded by. And not that you're saying I'm better than you, but always expecting better from ourselves, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And that's where that principle of having principles, having, right, that base ground, having the sacraments can be so fundamental. Like if I'm going to go to Mass, whether it's during the week or on Sunday, if I'm going to go to Mass and receive our Lord, right, in the sacrament of the altar, I have to be prepared to be united to him. I have to recognize my faults and failings and what I need to work on to enter into and be worthy of the life that he is offering me. And also to view the other people around us like they too are temples of the Holy Spirit in that moment. And they too are people that we have to look at differently than we commonly do.
And how about the power of families in that story? I love that he said, yeah, my mom, she wasn't very happy with it. This is a grown man who's making millions of dollars. He's at the peak of our cultural hierarchy, right? You know, well, what do you want to be? Well, quarterback for an NFL team is pretty high on young man's list, or actor or something like that, right? There's not many people above Marcus Mariota, yet who's he accountable to and who's playing a role in his life? His mom, still. And I just think, man, you moms out there, stay strong, and your influence is not going, you know, for naught. And to keep that up, I think.
Right.
Like, even you think, well, I'll get him out of the house, and then, no, here's a guy who's a grown man, still has that he has that close relationship with his mother. I can only hope that my kids keep that relationship with me throughout their lives. Hey, before we go to a break, let me remind you that if you would like great insight on growing strong Catholic men, if you've got sons and daughters out there that you want to grow up to be like Marcus Mariota, let me remind you that we are supported by a couple of amazing magazines. One's called Radiant and one's called Valiant. Radiant is for women and Valiant is for men. You can go and subscribe to these magazines at radiant.osv.com or valiant.osv.com. Absolutely full of great articles by top Catholic thinkers, amazing stories. Go check that out right now. Radiant.osv.com or valiant.osv.com.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Welcome back. One of the topics that I think we all need to really be aware of in our culture right now is the rising number of people who do not identify with any religion whatsoever. The rise of the nuns, as we call them, and not the ones wearing the habits, but the other ones, the nuns who, again, identify with no religion. We are seeing, you know, back in the 70s, it was maybe 3% of people that identified as not really identifying with any religion whatsoever. But as of today, in the last 10 years, we've seen that number just in 10 years go from 16% of the population to 25. Here's what's even more shocking, Don. We've seen that 50% of people who have been baptized in the last 30 years into the Catholic Church, 50% of them no longer practice their faith. And not just that, they now identify as one of the nuns.
Yeah, I've heard this from a priest not that long ago, and I can't remember if it was 50%, but in his parish, he said the number of people that go through RCIA but then are not there the following Easter, like they're still not attending, was pretty high. The percentage, I can't remember the exact number, but it was a percentage that shocked me. And he's like, we got to be doing something different, because this is not effective if we're just getting people in to RCIA and then they're not sticking around, or we're not getting people into RCIA at all. I know the numbers, we'd love for the numbers to be higher in there. So what can we do? Well, Bishop Robert Barron, our Southern California auxiliary bishop, who will be, by the way, at One Life LA this weekend speaking. So that'll be cool. Join me there. Has a piece in First Things that's rather lengthy. You know, it's one of those. It's amazing how short our attention span is these days. We're like, wow, I got to scroll like four times for this thing.
You know, I've had to change the habit. It used to be I'd like highlight one point in the article and whoever it was from and then scroll to see how long. Now, so many of the articles are really long. And you know what's unfortunate? I swear there's no editor because a lot of them just repeat and repeat and repeat. I'm thinking like, did you edit this? Because you got some really good information, but you just said it five different ways, and I think some of the same exact sentences.
Now, we're not making that claim about Bishop Barron's article here.
Our attention span.
He has some great stuff. He talks about truth, goodness, and beauty, and how we need to build our evangelization efforts on those. Let's start with truth. I know one of the things that Bishop Barron talks about a lot is that the rise of scientism in our culture is keeping a lot of people out of the faith. I know that this has been a big thing for me. Long before I became Catholic, I was well aware of this problem. And indeed, it pushed a lot of my evangelizing efforts. And the idea here is that there's religion and then there's science. And science is based on evidence and reason and thinking and examining things and doing experiments and all that. And that produces knowledge. All right, science is based on objective facts and produces knowledge. And religion over here is based on nothing but fairy tales, wishful thinking, psychological needs, that sort of thing. And it produces beliefs or faith, right? And there's a dichotomy between those two things.
Well, and that's the issue, is that we've lived in a culture, especially over the last 100 years, more so the last 50, where faith and reason, there's no conversation between the two of them.
No.
One is reasonable and one is unreasonable. But that just absolutely destroys some of the primary ways of thought that have taken place in a culture since the beginning of time, right? The scientific method is relatively new. And you can't prove the scientific method in and of itself, right? It's just a theory. Yet everything we say is subjected to the scientific method.
There's the distinction in our culture, you're right, between faith and reason, something that started in earnest at the Reformation again. Hate to keep blaming the Protestants, but Luther did a lot of damage here. He definitely separated the realms of faith and rationality. He was not a big fan, let us say, of people like Thomas Aquinas, who did so much to synthesize faith and reason. And actually, that was a big factor in not only the Reformation, but in Western civilization since. Because you have seen intense secularization. Well, what does that mean, secularization? Well, it's that realm of our culture that's, you know, not religious, right? What realm is that? What you're understanding, if you believe that there's a secular realm to the world, what you are saying is that religion is something over here that doesn't touch all of reality. Mm-hmm. That's never been the Catholic belief. That's never been the Jewish belief. That's never been reality, right? What is religion? It's just the way we worship God. I mean, you define it however you want, but in antiquity, at least pre-Reformation, and in the Catholic world today, hopefully, is there any part of reality where God isn't, right? Is there any part of reality that's not touched by your relationship with God? Is there any part of reality that's not God created or anything? No, it's all God. So science, for example. What is science? Well, traditionally, the Catholics that came up with science, by the way, it's examining the physical world. And before the physical world, we had Aquinas was doing science, and the queen of the sciences was theology back in those days, because you needed that.
They're all different types. Yeah. And in fact, the material science has always been known as a lower form of that. In fact, you know, philosophy, theology, some of the higher ones, and science as we know it today was one of the lower. You know, that's where you see the body and form, right? You see the material and the spiritual reality come to two. And are we more material or are we more spiritual beings? And that's where we have to recognize the two go hand in hand. But we would cut out the meaning, the creation, the value behind so much of what we have. It's just reduced to what is before us.
Well, you made a great point, Emery, about the material being the lower part. Why would the study of matter be a lower part of science? Well, because it's so limited. Because matter is such a small part of all of reality, right? Many, many realms, many dimensions that are not material, spirit, ideas, all of these things, right? The universals, none of those things are material. God's not material. The main parts of reality are not material. If you reduce yourself to just studying the material, it's like you're wearing blinders. You're just looking at a particular thing. And guess what? Without the universals, without the theology, without the philosophy, you can't even study the material properly, because where are you going to get the ideas by which you study it? Where are you going to get the thoughts, all of that stuff? Well, and so, just to conclude that thought, what we have today is an attempt to just study the material without any of the philosophy. For one thing, it's not possible. And two, it just keeps you so blinkered as far as your understanding of reality. An example I always use is, it's like you're using the metal detector on the beach and you're finding metal, right? Well, metal detectors are very good for finding metal. But if your whole notion was, the only things I'm going to believe are true are things that make this metal detector beep. Other than that, there is no reality. Everything else is just faith. Well, you have a pretty limited view of reality. That's what we're doing with scientism. That's what we're doing with physicalism.
So I agree with you, Don. And I mean, you take practical examples today of some of the greatest struggles, right, that the Catholic Church is facing to the Catholic identity, to the human identity, right? You have this widespread view of gender ideology. There's no difference between male and female. And this is why I love working with this topic, because the reality is it the human person, the spiritual and the material? It makes sense, and we can deal with this issue, and we should not be afraid of it. Even just looking at the science, at the psychology and the neuroscience of male and female in the body, and the way that men and women interact, and many levels points to the fact that there are indeed differences between men and women. And in those rare cases where, say, a young baby boy or baby girl, that, you know, it's ambiguous genitalia, or we can't tell, you can still test as God created us in the chromosomal knowledge that we have. What do the chromosomes say? Is it male or female? But you know what's so funny is that we started the show talking about college campuses. I just had a conversation with where someone, you know, Catholic, kind of cradle Catholic, maybe a little lukewarm, right? And they're talking and they're like, oh, they're talking about gender ideology as if it's a thing, you know, that no difference between male and female. And just really quietly, you know, I kind of just said, well, I mean, there's a lot of information out there. And I just start to say, you know, if someone's born with ambiguous genitalia, you can still check, you know, what do the chromosomes say? And it's so funny because she goes, well, and she just changes the topic right away. Very smart, intelligent young woman, well studied. And it just made me laugh because she knew that I was bringing theology into a conversation that I was also bringing science into. When you bring the two together, people shut down today right now, because for some reason they don't want to hear the two side by side, because the two side by side make sense. And that's where Bishop Robert Barron is talking about truth, the beauty, goodness, all of these elements. The Catholic Church is taking every issue and recognizing who we are centered around a spiritual, material reality that have an incredible union and a purpose and a creation that is relevant to who you are as a person.
Yeah, and the bottom line is you actually can't even do science without theology. I think that's a strong point. In fact, if you go to donjohnsonministries.org and just go in the search button and put science and worldview or something, you'll get a bunch of articles, a bunch of blog posts. And I go through, I have a rather lengthy post myself on this. It's actually a chapter.
A scroll one.
It's actually a chapter from a book I wrote. But it walks through the idea that you don't actually have, you're not able to do science in the way we do science unless you start with Christianity. There's a reason science grew up in the Western world and nowhere else. It's because we had Christianity. You need things like rationality. It doesn't grow up in a Buddhist nation. You're going to say, oh, that sounds bigoted. No, that's just a worldview thing, okay? If everything is one, you know, if everything is all and all is one, you don't do science in the way we do science. It doesn't grow up in an animalistic worldview where there's spirits in all of the trees and stuff. You're not going to do experiments on trees if you think that it's going to change tomorrow because of a different spirit, right? You need a Christian worldview with its emphasis on rationality, with its emphasis on order, and with its emphasis on a creator who is rational and orderly in order to do science. And so don't buy into this notion that science and Christianity are at odds. They're not at all. indeed, we need not just Christianity, but we need Catholic Christianity in order to do science.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So we're talking a lot about the nuns and the crisis of the lack of, and not just Christianity, but even just the pursuit of a worldview or a meaning or a substance in our life. You know, we're seeing the vast majority of people are not identifying with any religion, and we're losing 50% of the Catholics that have been baptized in the last 30 years. And, you know, I look at it and I hear all of these young men and young Catholic women of my age who say, there's no one of substance for me to marry, no one of substance for me to date, and they're struggling. Well, it's because we are not doing our job in evangelizing people, not because they need spouses, but because we need good men and women who are going to do good things and grow and raise good men and women, because our lives matter. Where we're going matters. So I think that where we need to take this is a practical element. How do we ourselves evangelize? Maybe you've never thought about that, but the reality is that the church for years, since the beginning of the insemination of the church, we have seen that Christ told his apostles to go out two by two, going together, to baptize in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. How do we evangelize? If to be a Christian means to be a missionary, which it does, and the Catholic Church has many documents on this, including all the documents of the new evangelization, then how do we ourselves evangelize in our friendships, in our families, in the ministry and apostolic work that we do? This is important. And I think that this draw to truth, beauty, and goodness, showing, you know, that faith and reason come together, and encouraging people. You know, one of the things that Bishop Robert Barron mentioned was literature, and how people really do hold a very high view of music literature as truth, even though they wouldn't necessarily say that. That a lot of what people write are some of the deepest longings, the deepest thought processes of the soul, and that we can learn from that. Even if they're not saying, this is how I learn, they do, just like we see the influence of media today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, truth, beauty, and goodness are all sort of the same thing from different sides,
right?
And so building your life on that, are you a person who is exhibiting beauty in your own life through your virtue? Are you seeking after truth? Are you studying? Are you reading? Are you learning the truth about the faith? Are you telling that to others in an attractive way? Are you creating beautiful things? I think we were all meant to create in some way. You know, we've got this distinctive, well, there's the creatives out there. I get that, you know.
No.
I think everybody can create and whatever it might be. People are attracted to beauty. It doesn't, you know, one of the beauties of the Catholic Church is, you know, not only the great cathedrals and churches that are so much more beautiful than your average Protestant one, by the way. There's a reason for that, because not only did Luther make a distinction between faith and reason, but also between this world and goodness and beauty here and the next one and goodness and beauty there. Your average Protestant church, especially historically, very austere, not many art pieces in it. It's very plain. Mm-hmm. Catholic Church has all that beauty, but it also has beautiful paintings and beautiful music and all of these things that we should be creating. We should be putting more of that stuff out there.
Well, and it has beautiful people. We were talking earlier in the day, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? We talked about football and all these different ideas earlier in the show. And I don't think we asked the question, who do you want to be? Who are you? And we have the example of beautiful, truthful, incredible individuals, the saints of the Catholic Church, who have written, you know, piece upon piece. Look at modern saints, right? You look at JP2, St. Mother Teresa, and all of these different saints with different things that they were passionate about, whether it be, you know, philosophy, whether it be science, whether it be, you know, a man who was a carpenter. Like, we have people in all different avenues of life, not just priests, not just nuns. We have doctors. We have so many incredibly talented people, or people who lived ordinary lives with extraordinary expectations of themselves, who we can learn about the greatness of the call of the Christian lifestyle.
I think of a guy like Tolkien, you know, and we're not geniuses like Tolkien, but not only in his life did he exhibit the beauty of the faith, but in his art. So Lord of the Rings, God's not mentioned once in Lord of the Rings.
Right.
But God is the main character of Lord of the Rings, and the Catholic worldview absolutely drives the story of Lord of the Rings. So I think of Tolkien's story as something that is a premier example of the new evangelization. Right? Like, this is drawing people. His life did too, though. Like C.S. Lewis, for example, in interacting with Tolkien, moved from atheism, not only Tolkien, but he was one of the main ones, moved from being an atheist to a believer because of the way he was influenced. So you're talking about the saints. We're talking about artwork. All of these things should be having an impact on those around you.
Well, when you talk about the impact that people have around you, this is where I think that we do have a challenge today. Social media does have a great impact on people around us, but people ultimately convert because of the beauty that they see of the person, the truth they see of the person. And when we spend so much time on social media, it prevents us from allowing another person to truly see us. And that's where I think that it's important to be reminded that while we are called to be creators as well, right? Following in the one whose image we are made in, right? The ultimate creator. You know, you don't have to be just creating, you know, a piece of art before you. You don't have to be writing an incredible novel. But you yourself have things that you truly are good at. And within your skill set, within the community that you work in, you have things to contribute. And that first creation is who you are. How are you molding and crafting yourself, building yourself up? The discipline with exercise, your discipline with virtue, the different virtues. Do you know what the Catholic Church's virtues are? Do you know what the corporal works of mercy are? You know, those truly do create a new creation. And that's where, you know, St. Paul talks about being a new creation in Christ. That's what we're called to daily.
Do you know what the virtues are? Do you know what the corporal works of mercy are? Do you know the Bible? This is another thing Bishop Barron brings out in this article, is that the message we proclaim to others can't be this truncated, just, you know, Jesus loves you. Okay, I saw it on a bumper sticker. That's nice. It's true. But there's so much more to the gospel message than that. And he actually focuses on something that's pretty close to my heart, understanding the Old Testament. And how the whole story of redemption works together, and the calling of Abraham and the building up of Israel. And what part did King David play in the whole redemptive story? If we're going to be good evangelizers in this culture, I think we should know those things and understand how the Catholic Church is the fulfillment of all of history,
right,
from the very beginning, from creation. And that story is so compelling that if we could just get it out there, I just don't think people know it. Like, even as Catholics, we don't know, right, it, so we can't share it with others. Yeah. But the world is just longing, it's yearning to know where we came from and where we're going, and how can we find peace and happiness. I think we need to know the whole story.
He gave us an Old and a New Testament.
Yeah, God gave us that for a reason. We know our history.
Well, and that's the thing, is we don't know, unfortunately, our biblical history. And when we do, people all of a sudden come to understand what the good news of the gospel truly was. Do we understand that the gates to heaven were closed? Do we understand that we did not have reconciliation? We did not have the Eucharist. Well, we had God, the God of the Old Testament, the same God. And I hate it when people talk about the God of the Old Testament, right, versus the God of the New Testament. The two are one and the same, but they continue to work with us in our human frailty to be better human people. And when we study the Old Testament, oh my gosh, I actually think a lot more men in particular would be Catholic, would be pursuing their faith if they studied the Old Testament and saw the grandeur of the human person and the calling that every man has, even in the midst of great sin, because almost all the patriarchs were phenomenal sinners.
Phenomenal sinners. That's a great point, Tim. Before we close up today, let's do some reminders about where we're going to be and how you can get in contact with us. I know we've got March for Life's coming up this weekend.
Yeah, I'll be at the Walk for Life in San Diego. I'll be emceeing. My book will be available. Might also be up in San Francisco, looking at last minute trips for the San Francisco Walk for Life. But please reach out, especially Roe v. Wade, the topic of abortion, contraception, and, you know, pure love in the sense of theology of the body in marriage or something that I talk about every day with gender ideology, please invite us out to speak, because we are here as a resource for you and your community.
I will be this weekend at One Life LA. Damon Owens, Patricia Heaton, Bishop Barron, a bunch of great people will be there. So that should be fun. Join me in LA. Also, we're booking throughout the next year. If you want chastity talks, if you want sexual revolution talks, the new movie's coming out this summer. And if you would like to host a screening of that and have me come talk in conjunction with that, these events that we're going to put on, I think, are going to be really powerful. A countercultural revolution is what we're trying to do with this movie. So go to DonJohnsonMinistries.org or Timory.com to find out more about that. And we'll see you next time.
From the studios of Relevant Radio, this has been Trending with Don and Timory. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DonJohnsonMinistries.org or Timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.